Case for argument, United States v. Santiago, Mr. Meshek.
Good afternoon. May it please the Honorable Court. My name is Ralph Metrick, and I represent the appellant Eli Santiago in this case. I would respectfully reserve about 2 minutes rebuttal time if necessary. In the government's brief, they pointedly used the words, "the jig is up." In other words, when Eli Santiago was confronted with the receipt that was found by the agents in that gym bag with the health club receipt, that was the trigger, or that's what prompted, according to the government, for Mr. Santiago to give a conditioned, or a they call a quid pro quo, a consent to the search of his home where he really lived with his fiance and two small children. That when they said the jig is up, in other words, he was confronted with incriminating evidence. And I respectfully would submit and assert to you that he was confronted with absolutely nothing at that point. Mr. Santiago originally, what he was confronted with, I should say, was with a fait accompli. If the agents hadn't threatened Santiago with the arrest and the arrest of his fiancée and the taking away of his two children to the Department of Children and Family Services, if there had not been any threat whatsoever, I would respectfully submit to the court.
I don't know why that's a threat. I think it's just a statement of what's going to happen.
Well, I would, with all due respect, Judge Posner, I would characterize that as a threat, as an intimidating words.
Well, I think it's information he'd like to know. What's going to happen to his girlfriend and his kids, right?
Well, it was conditioned. It was according to the finding of fact where the district court made the finding of fact that one of the witnesses called in a motion to suppress, Sergeant Figueroa, was in fact credulous. To quote the district court in that case, I think I can paraphrase it. He said that he was highly credible because it was Sergeant Figueroa who overheard the agents tell Eli Santiago, say, "We now have this receipt. We're going there. And if you don't sign a consent in so many words, we are going to arrest an innocent person," essentially arrest an innocent person, the wife and the two kids.
The police don't know that she's an innocent person. You go into an apartment and find a lot of drug stuff and guns, I suppose you arrest the occupants.
But it was, in fact, a fait accompli. If you say they weren't innocent, I think it can safely be argued that she...
If you go into a house where there are drugs and guns and so on, and someone's smiling at you or something, you arrest that person, obviously.
Well,
I would.
On all due respect, Your Honor, they didn't really think so, because, after all, Eli Santiago was the target of this investigation from the beginning.
Sure, but she's a likely accomplice, right?
I wouldn't say that.
Well,
she was simply she would have simply been present on the premises.
Well, he's
and not know anymore.
The drug business. I don't know.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Could be innocent, but certainly he would want to know that she was at risk of arrest. And of course, if they're both arrested, so they have to do something with the kids.
But it wasn't even informational here. It wasn't informational at all. It was a pointed, deliberate threat that was made against them, even if they were in fact culpable.
Well,
assuming they were culpable. I'm sorry.
Isn't it true, counsel, though, that the defendant then proceeded to negotiate with the officers prior to giving his consent, a deal that they would not attribute any of the drug evidence or other evidence to his girlfriend and leave the kid alone?
I don't think
and
it was...
That shows that his will was not overborne and therefore the consent was valid?
Your Honor, there wasn't an arm's length negotiation between Mr. Santiago and the agents in this case.
Well, it never has to be.
I don't mean to be facetious. It certainly wasn't any bargaining on his part. He was truly presented with a fait accompli. After they couldn't find anything in the father-in-law's and his mother's home, they then took him outside, first threatening him inside, overheard by the stepfather. Then they took him outside by the side of a car, and they told him, look, we are going to go over there now. We know where you live. We know where she lives. And he says, how can I trust you? What guarantee can I have, according to the agents, according to them? And actually more was said, because according to His Honor Judge Gettleman, the district court judge in this case, he did not find the agents credible at all. What he actually said was there was more to be said. Actually, more happened. More was said than the agent admitted on the witness stand. So they told him it's either this or else. That essentially was the choice that he had, and Santiago testified that he had no choice in the matter whatsoever.
But if they were speaking truthfully, I don't see the problem. That is, if it was their intention to arrest her unless he gave the consent because they had suspicion, it would have been a lawful arrest.
Well, they had no suspicion. They had absolutely nothing.
I don't understand you saying that. If the police go into a house, apartment or something, where there is obvious evidence of illegal activity in plain view, and there's an adult present, they will suspect the adult of being implicated.
And there's a Supreme Court case that even says, even in an automobile where the evidence isn't in open or plain view, you can arrest all the occupants. But this case is a little bit different. I think it's quite different than the hypothetical you posed to me. And the reason is, they had no clue what was inside that house. They may have had a hunch. They might have figured that here we have a drug dealer, and once we have a drug dealer, it's more likely than not what we might find the proceeds, more contraband.
Sure, but what he knows is if they go he knows what's there, so he knows that they're going to go there, and they're going to see the woman. In the presence of these drugs and guns and so on, so they'll have probable cause to arrest her.
But that may be true, and he could have waited. What was the rush? That's what I'm saying. If that's the case, he had to be threatened. That's what brought him to his knees in this case, was the threat.
The rush is that so what he knows is they're going to go to the apartment, they're going to see the drugs, they'll probably arrest the woman, and then they'll have to do something with the kids. So that's what he knows.
And that's when he can exculpate.
Now he has an opportunity. Now, knowing that, he negotiates this deal. So what's wrong with that?
I'll tell you what's wrong with it. Because he didn't... It's only in the face of the intimidation.
You're just using words, intimidation,
well, then
threat,
let me not use those.
He knows that the woman is at high risk of being arrested, and that if she is arrested, the children will be removed to somewhere.
Judge Posner, then he can exculpate them later. He didn't have to sign a consent.
No. That's a big risk. That's a big risk.
I don't think it's such a risk at all here.
That's a big risk.
I would respect.
How's he going to exculpate them?
Because they dragged him all over the place. They first dragged him to his mother's and stepfather's house. They knew that was the next step, that they would drag him in handcuffs to the house where he lived with the fiancé and the two children. So they were going to bring him there anyway. And if ultimately they would, in fact, discover the contraband, then just like here, he could say, wait a minute,
I'll take
the blame for that.
That's too late.
I don't think it's too late at all. It's his exculpatory. It's an exculpatory.
He hasn't given the police anything, right? So why should they allow it? They made a deal. And if he hadn't made the deal, they might have arrested the woman, even if he said, oh, she's innocent.
It's not much of a deal.
They don't have to believe him when he says that.
It's not much of a deal when it's not a rational choice, Judge Posner.
Seems to me.
I think it's a visceral choice. They dangled the wife and kids in front of him.
He had put them at risk. was he or put them at risk?
If they weren't in plain view, we don't know that. It was, in fact, hidden.
He knew.
He knew, but they didn't know.
He knew that he had placed them at risk.
He knew he placed them at risk, but he could have easily taken the chance and waited. As a matter of fact, as I said
it's
a moment ago...
the wisdom of hindsight.
Perhaps, but there's no question in this case that we know from the findings of fact made by the trial judge that there were, in fact, again, I know you don't like this word, but there were threats, in fact, made in the presence of his stepfather, who heard him say, sign this, or essentially, or else.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Majek.
Your
Mr. Perry, Ms. Perry.
Thank you.
Sorry.
May it please the court, opposing counsel. While the defendant could have chosen to not place to place his wife, our girlfriend, and child at risk, he made the choice instead not to do that. According to the district court's findings, that was a rational choice, and his free will was not overborne when he made that decision. The district court in this case used the proper test, which was the totality of the circumstances. He analyzed the amount of time that the police asked the defendant for consent, which was only approximately 15 minutes. He analyzed the defendant's criminal history, which was extensive and included more than 5 arrests. He analyzed the defendant's age, which in this case was not, the defendant was not a young man, he was approximately 29. He also made a note that the defendant was not under any physical discomfort at this time, and that he did not rely on his physical discomfort when he granted this consent. Moreover, despite the defense counsel's assertion that a threat was made in this case, that is not part of the district court's factual findings. The district court analyzed the totality of the circumstances, and while he did find that the Agent Loring may have said more than he recalled saying, he at no time made a credibility finding that was adverse to Agent Loring. He simply found that the agent may have forgotten something about his interactions. And even if the agent did forget something about his interactions, the district court found that this was not enough to overbear the defendant's free will. For those reasons, and analyzing all of those factors, the district court properly concluded the defendant's consent in this case was voluntary.
Is our review de novo, or...
Your Honor, you're trying to determine this case whether or not the district court clearly erred. There was no clear error in this case.
I'm just wondering, is that the appellate standard, clear error for whether you have a coerced statement?
Your Honor, the voluntariness of a statement is a question of fact.
It is? Okay. Another question I have. I'm sorry.
Are we talking about voluntariness of statement or consent to search?
The voluntariness of a consent to search is a question of fact. Whether
that's
or not the defendant...
That's the Schneckloth case. Now, that's
yes.
That's not the voluntariness of a confession. That's
correct.
That's another question.
It is a different question,
and
however...
A different standard.
Yes.
All right.
Is this a case for a Palladino remand?
Yes, Your Honor. In light of this court's recent holding in the United States versus Palladino, the government would request that the case be given a limited remand for the district court to determine whether or not it would have imposed a lower sentence.
Okay. Well, thank you, Ms. Perry.
Thank you.
Mr. Meshick, how much time does he have?
15 seconds.
I'll speak very, very quickly. Okay. I think Cornelius versus United States does require a de novo review, not of the findings of fact, but on the issue of on the law, and most respectfully, the district court misapplied the law in this case. Concerning what counsel said about my client's experience, it is, I think, totally irrelevant what his criminal history is in this type of a case. It's not being confronted with fingerprints or false confession by a confederate. What this really is here is a confrontation, if you will, by the police. I'm sorry, let me back up.
I thought Judge Gettleman summed it up pretty well. He says that may well be he had no choice to do this, but it wasn't because it was involuntary. It was because of the facts he created by having drugs and guns in his house.
But Judge Gettleman also said in the same, and I think it's somewhat, with all due respect to Judge Gettleman, a bit inconsistent in his opinion, in his decision, he also says that that sort of would have eliminated, lessened the threat, but a threat nonetheless at the same time. Judge Gettleman said that, that his consent, and he specifically ties it into the language in his decision that there was a threat.
He says whether or not there was some sort of implicit threat, he says...
Would have lessened a threat?
Whether or not there was, your girlfriend could be in trouble here as well. I mean, that is a fact. If she was living there and they found contraband there, it's possible they could draw that conclusion. He didn't want that to happen, to his credit.
But he
thought... It's a fact. She was at risk. He placed her at risk. He decided to remove the risk.
But there's one other factor we can't forget. Once the police raided, came into the house, and they did find the contraband, the girlfriend wasn't arrested. They never did anything about it. Didn't mean anything. But again, I have
They'd
to say that
deal.
Judge Gettleman...
I don't understand you. They'd made a deal with them that they wouldn't arrest her.
If you really look at it, what kind of a deal is it? It says the contraband... any contraband found that exculpated her. What kind of a deal was that? All it was is what the agent wrote down. They didn't have to be bound by that. If you look at it, I think very carefully, and I know you will, that isn't any kind of a deal. It just says anything found there doesn't belong to her. It didn't say you can't prosecute her. It says you can't.
No. Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Meshick.
Your Honor, thank you.
Thank you to both counsel. And court will be in recess until 9:30 tomorrow.